You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
I love this story that Cormac McCarthy tells about being so broke that he couldn't afford the price of a tube of toothpaste and was on third or fourth or fifth day of brushing his teeth with hand soap, with baking soda. He went out to the mailbox to mail yet another manuscript off, and there in the mailbox was a sample of Crest toothpaste. And he said from that day forward, he never worried about money again, thinking that if he needed toothpaste or a cup of coffee, it'd be there somehow, some way. And that's kind of the way it has worked for me in my life.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. And that was Sonny Brewer talking to Air Schooner correspondent James Redd on a beautiful but windy day at the Mississippi University for Women. Brewer had been the featured speaker at last summer's Eudora Welty Writer Symposium in Columbus. And Redd sat him down to share some of his thoughts on today's theme, money.
You know, Scott, the poet Robert Graves once said, "There's no money in poetry, but there's no poetry in money either." And we're not only going to hear from Sonny Brewer today, but from the poet Denise Duhamel, whom I asked this question: what is the relationship between poetry and money?
Well, I think there isn't one, which is so freeing. A poet, it's not that we're morally superior. There's just no money to be made, except for maybe a very few of us. And it's still not going to be made by your poetry. It'll be made by giving readings and whatnot, or some big prize. But when you think of even the biggest prize in poetry compared to a book deal for a memoir or novel being made into a movie, I mean, it's really not that much. So I think poets, in a way, by default, just become our conscience. Because we're never going to sell out, there's no way to sell out, really, that we can sort of say whatever we want. Or I feel that permission.
I think that you feel that permission is clear.
But I think poets should embrace it. You know what? I mean, I don't understand why more people aren't outraged. I mean, I think people are outraged, but I know just in talking to other poets are outraged, but I'm surprised that there isn't more outrage in the work, because really nothing, knock on wood, is going to happen by pointing out that the emperor has no clothes. There's no poetry police, you know, to arrest us or anything that I know of.
Sometimes I see a couple people lurking at AWP that I wonder, is that them?
Ready to just like handcuff you and bring you away in a squad car.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny.
You know, Stacy, it is funny, but it's also wonderful to know that a writer can write with nothing to lose. And I think Sonny Brewer talked to us about being so poor that you don't really have a lot to lose.
Sonny Brewer is founder of the Over the Transom bookstore in Fairhope, Alabama, and the former editor-in-chief of Macadam Cage.
He also assembled the recent Don't Quit Your Day Job, Acclaimed Authors and the Day Jobs They Quit. Sonny Brewer is the author of novels such as The Poet of Tolstoy Park and The Widow in the Tree. Brewer had some more to say about writers and money.
Only 5% of the people who call themselves writers, meaning they've published something, only 5% make a living at it. Say that another way, 95% of the people who call themselves writers can't make a living, cover the mortgage and their coffee and such from writing their books. 95% of them. So you really kind of need a day job. And it's important to tend the bottom line, because you can't, unless you just inherited $10 million from your grandma and you want to spend it on publishing books and you'll quit when the $10 million is over, you expect to make books. And so the idea that literary fiction might not make enough money for you, it's a very questionable. So if you looked at memoirs and cookbooks and fantasy fiction and science fiction and murder mystery and thriller and literary fiction, the poorest selling of the lot is literary fiction.
You know, Stacy, despite Brewer saying that literary fiction won't make you much money, he still seems to think writers should do it anyway.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I feel kind of inspired by what Brewer said next.
So somehow, you know, we're covered. We're covered. The idea is to be devoted to your craft of writing your book, and if you think you need to quit your day job in order to get the novel written, I think take permission, go ahead and quit. And just see if it works out for you. You can always go back. If it doesn't work, and your wife throws you out on your ear because you sat around for a couple of 3 years nursing a novel that didn't work, didn't sell anything, then go get a job. It's not a mutually exclusive proposition. Then write your book and trust that there'll be some money and when you need it.
Denise Duhamel does have a day job. She's professor of English at Florida International University. And when I interviewed Denise, our conversation turned from a discussion about poets and money to a discussion about her work that engages pretty head-on with money and capitalism.
Duhamel is the author of numerous poetry collections, including Ka-Ching, The Star-Spangled Banner, which is winner of the Crab Orchard Poetry Prize, Kinky, Girl Soldier, How the Sky Fell, and Queen for a Day, selected in new poems. Her latest book, Blowout, was just released from University of Pittsburgh Press.
Here's Duhamel reading the opening of the poem Recession Commandments. This section is entitled Foreclosure.
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's corner lot, nor thy neighbor's broadband connection, nor granite countertops, nor thy neighbor's ease in large groups of people, nor thy neighbor's two-car garage, nor pool, nor marble tile, nor screened-in porch, nor thy neighbor's healthy eating habits, nor closet space, nor billiard room, nor central air, nor salt and pepper shakers, nor thy neighbor's direct sunlight. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor garden, nor gardener, nor Lexus, nor thy neighbor's perfect children, nor thy neighbor's popularity, nor clean driving record, nor thy neighbor's husband and his sweet job, nor thy neighbor's credit score, nor vacation plans, nor thy neighbor's wardrobe, nor washing machine, nor friendly hellos, nor energy drinks, nor hairstyling products, nor kayak, nor spice rack, nor thy neighbor's jacuzzi. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's merry maids, nor contractors, nor pedigree dogs, nor thy neighbor's manicures, nor thy neighbor's spa memberships, nor back scratchers, nor matching luggage, nor table manners, nor graceful walk, nor thy neighbor's passport, nor trust fund, nor safe full of cash, nor curtains, nor down comforter, nor leather couch, nor thy neighbor's charity work. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's oxygen bar, nor ass, nor Assembly of God membership, nor anything else that is thy neighbor's.
Duhamel told Stacy a bit about the context for the poem, about what she was observing in the economy and in Florida at the time the poem was written.
Well, this was in 2008, and it was right before the financial meltdown, and I live in Florida, where there are actual, they call them vertical ghost towns, so, you know, these large, I live near a Trump Tower that is the height of luxury, right? $1 million apartments, blah, blah, blah. It was supposed to revitalize the neighborhood. Well, guess what? There's no one in them. I mean, maybe four people are in them. So I drive home from work and you see four little lights and basically they're empty. And there are other similar buildings all throughout Florida that just have this sort of creepy quality of, wow, this should be really luxurious. But guess what? It's just mold. It's going to mold because they can't even afford to put the air conditioning on. Do you know what I mean? So it's just really kind of boom and bust economy where I live, and it's sort of in your face to see it. I mean, I'm just seeing it all around me, so I guess it was a way to sort of report it and put it all in. And I think there is this sort of guilt about screwing up with money that people have. Like, well, it was certainly their fault, and why did they go in over their heads? And it's sort of people waving their fingers at the actual people who are now living in their cars rather than at the banks.
Scott, I don't know if you've seen Duhamel's previous book before Blowout, but it's a collection of poems called Ka-Ching, which is a book that also focuses on money. The poems actually are composed on fake bills Duhamel bought at the thrift store.
Ka-Ching, there's the first part of the book is basically $1 million worth of poetry, because at a thrift store I found these $100,000 bills of play money, and I didn't even know there was possibly a $100,000 bill, which cracked me up anyway, so I just bought them all, and what I did was do visual poems where I wrote prose poems to fit the backs of those bills. So I wanted the back of each bill to be filled up with words, and all the same number, not the same number of words, because words have, you know, different lengths, but the same number of characters, if you will. And I fed those bills into my printer. I mean, they actually really exist as little pieces of visual poetry. And I guess the challenge was I had 10 $100,000 bills, which is $1 million, and each little prose poem was sort of a different aspect of money. And I think money, like sex or other, I'm trying to think of other things that people feel taboo about. I mean, I think money is one of them, actually, that people feel is very private and shouldn't be talked about in polite company, blah, blah, blah. So I felt like I wanted to do it.
Duhamel is spot on when she talks about money being a taboo subject. At least it was in my family.
And it seems especially taboo for writers, both because maybe we're supposed to be too romantic to care about it, and of course because we don't have any money.
We want to thank both Denise Duhamel and Sonny Brewer for being willing to talk and write about money.
And thanks to James Redd and his Crooked Letter interview series, published on prairieschooner.unl.edu, for that great on-location interview with Sonny Brewer, which we heard took place under a quintessentially southern tree.
Yeah, and among cars and motorcycles and airplanes, too. And we're going to close the show with just a few of the ending lines to Duhamel's poem, Recession Commandments, from section 3 of the poem, which is called Inflation.
Thou shalt watch American Idol, whether on TV or podcast. Thou shalt watch anything that will give thee false hope that thou could compete on a show like America Has Talent or I Love Money to earn a windfall. That thou could once again afford heavenly hash ice cream, earth shoes, or a new Brita water filter, though thou shalt not even dare to window shop for a killer purse, adult DVDs, sunglasses that last year thou would have thought a bargain. Thou shalt ignore the news. The Pacific island nation of Palo threatened with disappearance. Houses in Alaska plunging into the sea. A redrawn map of the United States with Florida, where thou livest, chopped off, submerged. Thou shalt not relive the hurricanes, especially Katrina, after which thou bought gas cards and boxed up all the little toiletries, shampoos and soaps thou had taken, though thou shalt not steal, from hotels to send to New Orleans, because even people who lost everything might want to smell good and rub a little lotion into their arms. Thou shalt not buy too much gas. Thou shalt not go too far. Thou shalt not replace thy stove, nor thy light bulb, nor thy shoelaces, nor thy baking soda in the fridge. Thou shalt not be nostalgic. Thou shalt not bear witness to the sad stories around thee, the abandoned hotels, once swanky but now full of crack, the girl squatting in the apartment with nothing but a mattress and a webcam, the man living in his car, washing in the outdoor showers at the beach before he heads off to work. Thou shalt not believe it. Thou shalt not inflate thine own suffering, nor the suffering of others. Thou shalt not believe it could happen to thee.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.